folks. We are back on the Flagstick.com T-Talk podcast. Stefan Tiedorf here with my co-host, Scott McLeod. Scotty, how are you today?
I'm doing great, man. Sunshining. Golf season is a-coming.
It is. Well, from some, I think this is my last podcast without the roommate moving in.
Yeah, I love that.
The wife is due on Friday. This is Tuesday. I have a feeling it's tomorrow for some reason. So I don't know when golf season starts for me. I went to a park today. Public park with soccer fields and hit golf balls across the park. Had to deal with some sort of Karen looking at me. I'm pretty sure she wrote my license plate down. She like kept walking in front of me with her dog. I don't know what she was thinking. But swing
feels
good.
Has she seen you golf?
Yeah.
Like, no, even trying to get within range of you might be tough, right?
I was striping them out there. I was feeling good. I'm feeling good. I'm looking forward to getting to a range. Now, this guy's been to a golf course. Our producer, our editor, our guy that makes us sound great, Brendan Kennedy, in the house today. It's been a while, but you played some golf recently. How you doing, bud?
I did. I'm doing pretty well. I made the still pretty rookie mistake of going to the range on Friday and then going out on Sunday.
Okay.
Conditions were actually really good, though. They let us drive a cart, so that's already pretty
good
start.
It's a win for you, right?
It's a win, a big win for me. But yeah, the shoulders were hurting a bit, so didn't play all that well, but whatever. It was good to be out.
All right.
Shoulders were hurting. Like, how many swipes were you just, you had a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Did you hit like the jumbo bucket on Friday, like 600 balls or what?
Yeah, jumbo bucket, no stretching.
No stretching. And I'm for the, you're an audio guy that played baseball. Like, let's clarify, you are not a golfer.
That's very much correct. Yes.
Yeah. So it's not like we know exactly what we're doing. We're just out there having a good time. I mean, but how are things for you? I think we're heading in the right direction, right? Where, our tour's starting to get booked here. Are you getting any feel of going back to work soon?
Yeah. I mean, in the States, things are for sure moving in the right direction. And I hear of stuff happening at least in the fall. And like, as far as like seeing friends down in the States, they're starting to book stuff up for the fall. Up here, obviously we're a little bit behind, but yeah, things are at least, there's like a light at the end of the tunnel, and like late summer, early fall, I think things are really going to start moving. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it, but I'm going to get as much golf as I can between now and then.
You're going to be bringing the clubs with you on tour.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, Brendan, like it's a bunk or the clubs, you pick.
I'll sleep in the back. It's all good.
Well, we're looking forward to watching that, and we'll have to get out soon for a round. Hopefully, we're playing golf around here in the next couple weeks. But golf's been played. Golf's still going on down in the States. Pro Tour's on. Why don't we hit the week that was, Scotty?
Yeah, let's go at it. Obviously, we're going to start out with the birdie. I think both of us have a very similar birdie this week.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Matt Jones' pace of play. If you watch the Honda Classic, this guy steps up to the golf ball and just hits it very quickly. He has to be the quickest player on tour right now. I don't know if anybody, once they address it, it's that quick. Him and Sam Ryder had quite the similar, are they working with the same guy?
Where they
But prior, they do a very open stance practice swing, not full, couple of them, and then they do a couple very closed ones, address the ball, and then whack. And I figured you would know, if anyone would know, if these guys are working with the same guy.
Yeah, I didn't really pay attention to that. I heard a mention of it as far as coaching, but I wasn't sure. Sam Ryder, that'd be interesting to find out. Actually, Christine Fraser, who was on the show a few weeks back, golf architect, they went to school together at Stetson. And I can remember actually Sam Ryder playing at the Great Waterway Classic and her coming out to Loyalist to watch him play. So that's a number of years ago. But, he played well on the weekend. Matt Jones' pace of play, fantastic, especially on a golf course like this that's very difficult to play. I saw a couple of jokes that he should actually gain strokes on the field or partial strokes on the field based on his pace of play. So if you do play at a certain speed, that maybe that gets you some benefit in some ways. But yeah, certainly a great model for a lot of other players, and certainly it's great for spectators to see that as well and realize that you can play that way and be successful.
Yeah, I think it was an easy birdie. The tournament as a whole, we're going to get to our three-hole what do we call it? I don't even know what we called it. We're just making loops. Yeah, three whole loop names. We'll get to that at some point here. The tournament as a whole was just a dud, though. It had nothing for me. Even at the end, like, that's a tournament where you want it tight coming down to the end.
Yeah.
Where those holes are difficult. And Matt, good for him. He pushed for himself away from the field and just had to just hit greens. He could have made it, what was it, a triple on 18 and would have won. And just kind of, wow, keep hiccuping here. Very just dull compared to the last year when we had that battle with Sanjay and Mackenzie Hughes. No wine being exchanged this week. Nobody picked up a win on that one. I don't think any... We would not have gotten to Matt Jones in our picks. And
no, not at all. And I mean, it's too bad for the Honda Classic and the fact that, you know, the field obviously was weaker with the match play coming up this week and, you know, kind of, you know, jammed in there between the players as well. That's what we sort of hope for. The only thing that they can have going for them is a tight finish, and especially to get down to those last few holes, and I'll negate saying the name of it. But for it to be tight coming down there, and that would give it at least some drama to watch it. I can say I probably watched less of that broadcast than I have of any other tournament this year.
Yeah, which is, it's unfortunate. They have a stranglehold right now, especially on Sundays. I feel like they need to be taking advantage of this time way more, where baseball's not on, right?
Right.
Hockey is, you know, it's the dog days of winter for the hockey season. If you really think about it, the PGA Tour, I think, needs to be making some more primetime tournaments around here, getting more eyes on the field. At the end of the day, the players can always show up if they want to show up. So it's not too much they can do, but I digress. What do you want to go now? Par, bogey? What do you got?
You know what? I'm going to jump right to bogey, and I'll jump in there first, if you don't mind, because it's really related to the Honda Classic as well. I mean, Paul Azinger talking about Matt Jones was totally disrespectful. Matt Jones has been a pro for 20 years. He's won on the PGA Tour before. He's won two Australian Opens. Paul Azinger talked about him like he had just walked out of the locker room from shining shoes and came out to win this tournament. And you know what? If you're going to be the lead analyst for a golf tournament and for a network, it's your responsibility to do some homework. And generally, I don't love him as it is from a commentary standpoint.
That is terrible.
But this was really bad. And the fact that, you know, and obviously, you know, a lot of our Aussie friends were going nuts, you know, on social media and seeing that, and rightfully so. Pretending Matt Jones doesn't really matter. And I think that's the issue I have with Azinger. You know, he's dismissed the European Tour a lot. Now he's dismissing the Australians as well. It's a worldwide game. This is where all the players come from. This is not an all-American American leaderboard that you're going to see on the PGA Tour. The best players are coming from all over the place. If you're going to be the lead analyst, do your homework.
Yeah, Matt Jones has had quite a career. I mean, the guy's made 2.1 this year. He had a fourth at Bermuda, an 11th, right? Like he's had a decent year. Last year, almost made $1 million.
He's made almost $15 million on the tour.
Speaking of Australians, I was going through my phone for something. I don't know what it was. It was like the middle of the workday, like probably 2 o'clock. I was looking at something in my contacts. The next thing I know is my phone. I'm trying to FaceTime Luke Elvey on my phone. It just rang. It must. And I was like, I had my
because
I'm
skiing.
I'm working, right? So I had my headphones on. I'm working away, and I just panic. I was like, what is happening? Why am I trying to FaceTime Luke Elvey right now?
Masters announcer.
So, yeah. so Luke probably, or PGA Tour 2K21, you hear his voice all the time. Like, exactly. He must have just looked at his phone and was like, I don't even know this number. Not a chance he saved my contact information in there. But if he did, Luke, I apologize for giving you a random weekday call just to see what was up. I see how the family was doing.
That's awesome. What's your bogey for the week?
Yeah, since you went bogey, I'm going to go. I'll go bogey. My bogey for the week, I got into a fight on Twitter.
A little spat.
And if we still had this segment, Correct Opinions, this would have been a great week for it. Some lady and some guy were going back and forth about how Rory McIlroy needs a real caddy, because they shouldn't have his best friend on the bag.
Shouldn't have Harry Diamond?
Harry Diamond. And I got in there basically, you know, asking questions. Why isn't he a good caddy? You know, I think you're wrong. I mean, I wasn't being, they are wrong. And just, I'm giving them a bogey for that short-sighted mindset. And it was Harry Diamond. I don't know if people know this guy. Had a very good amateur golf career. Yeah, there's a reason Rory and him are best buds. Rory doesn't bet, like, he's not best buds with guys that are like just his high school mates. This guy played golf at a very young age, was always traveling. The only place he's going to make friends is with other golfers. And that's where him and Harry became friends.
I think he won the South of Ireland championship. They played county championships and Ireland Irish boys together and stuff like that. So yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Very respected caddy on the PGA Tour too. Like not just one of, he's not me. You know, when guys like me show up to PGA Tour, it's like, won't see you next week, bud, with Harry Diamond. It's like, they respect those type of guys. It was just such a bad conversation saying something like, you know, you need to get a guy like Bones out there. If Bones wanted to work to start, he would be working. He doesn't want to
work for anybody who wants.
And so I made the comment. I said to them, oh, like, so based on what you're saying, because they were saying JP Fitzgerald, his old caddy, he should come back because he won four majors with him. And I said, oh, I guess Phil should get Bones back. They won five majors. Like, well, but Phil's 50. It's like, so you mean there's context to the conversation? It's not just, you know, you need this guy that you won with. I just thought it's silly. They don't understand either. Like, unless you've been out there and you get the regular bag, that what that relationship looks like, and each guy is different. And I'm going to get to a guy where his story is a little bit different in my honorable mention this week of becoming a caddy, where, you know, that's just a relationship that works. And some guys, look at Lee Westwood. Do you think I'm drawing a blank on his girlfriend's name. Do you think she knows everything in and out and is the best person to be, you know, a professional caddy? No, but she's the best person for Lee Westwood right now. Right. Look how it's gone for him. That's what matters. Rory knows who's best for him. It wasn't JP anymore. It's Harry. He's had a great career. If you actually average it out from the amount of money made, and I hate to break it to all of you who believe only wins matter to these players, they play for money. It's a job. That's what they matter. And if you average it out, it's pretty similar that Rory in his 30s, who's taken on way more in his life, marriage, kids, yada, 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 might not be as focused on golf, still making the same amount of money. Just a terrible take. I'm giving both of you a bogey. I'm not giving your names. You probably won't ever hear it. I don't care.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, it's about the relationship with the player. You're right. You know, the players want certain things. Some players just want to sit there and, you know, they want to talk hockey. They want to talk other things, not about golf. They want to be comfortable out there. And that's what they have to do for, you know, 5 hours. You know, the caddy has input on some things, but in the end, the player hits the shots. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And they know, just like you said, what is best for them. And yes, he has made a coaching change. He's talking about making a coaching change, but even that, people are nitpicking it and talking about it, going, well, he needs to do this and he needs that. You know what? Rory and Pete Cowan are going to figure it out. You know, the thing is, you can't make everything perfect. That's just not the way it works. So you just figure out what's best for you at this time and you go with that.
The best part was this lady that I it's like 7:50 in the morning. I think I'm arguing with somebody. I haven't had my coffee. I should have known better. She's like, he needs to give his caddy one veto a year like Phil gave Bones.
Oh, boy.
Like, do you know he doesn't?
A
caddy might, and I say might. We've had top tier caddies on this podcast, tons of them, and top tier players on this podcast, tons of them. We had one of the best players of all time on this podcast. They're all going to say the same thing. A great caddy might save one shot a week.
Yeah,
might. So like, let's just settle down, right? Yeah, like, 100%. There's a reason, you know. You know, Lee Westwood's wife's out there because he's like, hey, you know what? I'd rather just have fun than might save one shot. But hey, that doesn't mean caddies aren't important. That's not what I'm saying.
No, and you know, on that vein, why don't you get to your honorable mention because it is caddy related and it ties in because I think it's a great one.
Well, no, how about you go first? Because we're talking Rory. So let's keep talking Rory. You talked about Peter Cowan there, him going for extra help. I think that is your honorable mention, an additional birdie this week.
Yeah, it is an additional birdie. You know what? Players really have to figure out what is good for them and what they need to do. And you know, it doesn't mean seen a wholesale change all of a sudden. I think what people think is that everything's black and white, it's on or off switch. It's not that he's not going to keep his relationship with his coach all time in his life. He's just looking for another bit of input from another top coach. That's all it is. It's nothing earth shattering. And don't think it's all or nothing. So you know what? He's going to go work with Cowan. Cowan gave him some input at the Players Championship. They'll call it an official change. It's not necessary to do that, but some of the media people think they have to make it that way. But I'll give him a birdie for that, just for seeking extra help. And I mean, and that's driven by him. I think a lot of people on social media will, you know, give it credit. Oh, we pressured him into it, that he needs it. And he, you know what? Yeah. He knows. He's not listening to what you've got to say. He's just making a decision based on what's going on in his life and his game, going, you know what? I think I need some help from a coaching perspective. It's not necessarily instruction-wise. You know, there might be an aspect in there, but he just needs a little bit of assistance. He's reaching out for that. You know, is it positive? Yeah, it could be. It might not work at all. So, but I mean, I saw all these takes of people. Oh, he should go see Butch Harmon. He should go be okay. He'll like figure out what he wants.
But Tiger worked for Butch.
exactly.
21 years ago.
Yeah.
So, one thing about
a birdie
that,
to him for that.
Yeah. Though. Did you? There's. I saw a great tweet. I ended up a good thread about. Sorry, I drew a Pete. The way he works with payment.
Oh, with Pete Cowan, yeah.
Yeah, with professional players, and wondering if Rory would take something different. Apparently, Peter Cowan only takes 4% only if you top 10. That's it, which is a lot, considering you're already probably giving your caddy 10, right? Yeah. So Rory, we know him. He backdoor top 10s into everything. That's how he rolls. A little bit. What are your thoughts reading that? I thought it was cool. He kind of explained why that is in that, and how he believes in results, and that's it's a result based business. So I'm only charging if you see results. Pays for his own flights, his own travel, all that stuff. Only if you top 10. You know, from a coaching side, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that model exists out there. There's a lot of players or a lot of coaches that do work on a percentage, because really it comes down to, as he says, it comes down to performance. And, you know, if you're just there and you're not making a difference for that player, unless they think that you've added value to the relationship and that is worth something, then, you know, it's up to them. So I think it's a great system to go at it. And if you think you make that contribution and make that difference, then you get rewarded for it. Now, obviously, he's a longtime experienced coach. He's not scratching his way up there, so he doesn't necessarily need it away, but he's fine. Yeah. But he wants to make sure that he is actually seeing a tangible, quantifiable difference in the player, and that the player is seeing that, and that makes it worthwhile. And I think that's probably a good position to be in, because then it's a little less risky for the player as well. I mean, they dive in there, and unless they do better, then that coach is not getting paid. So there's no high amount of risk. I mean, there's always going to be risk, but as far as having to reward him, it's all going to be based on performance.
Love it. I'm going to give, as you mentioned, we're sticking in the caddy vein. I'm going to give a birdie to Gino Benelli. He had a great thread on Twitter, and I'm going to read it. I'm going to try to get through this. Reading might not be my strong skill. Maybe. I don't know. I'm going to try to go through it. Basically, it's about how much caddies make. And I just thought it was a great thread. I thought it was funny. And just describes the different ways you can get into caddying, which we'll probably get to in a little bit with our guest, Mark Baldwin, who plays out on the Korn Ferry Tour. Got a lot of great stories. Feel like, you know, this is called a tease in the business. This is a guy we're going to have on a lot.
I think so.
Yeah, told a lot of great caddy stories. But this is a good one. So Gino Benelli, at Gino Benelli on Twitter. The number one question I get asked when people find out I caddy for a job, how much money do you make? I was working a desk job making just over 50K a year when Joel won the money list on the McKenzie Tour and got Korn Ferry Tour status. Remember, that's when I bent his four iron. Way out. Yeah. So he desperately wanted to caddy for him. He asked, I asked my wife if I could quit my job and hit the road with Joel. I started once the tour got back in the States, because South America is just too expensive to travel to. My starting salary was $850 a week and 7% of Joel's earnings. My first week was in Leon, Mexico. When I went to book my first flight, again, he said it was $850 a week. It was over $800 a flight. He hadn't booked a hotel room or bought any food. So he's basically praying at this point for a made cut.
Yeah.
The first few events were 1 week on, 1 week off, which meant he had to go back home to Idaho, which is where he lives every week. So not cheap, to say the least. Our first made cut came at our third event in South Carolina. Not sure what place we finished, but my additional income was $118. I remember being so happy. It was the first time in 3 weeks I didn't order the cheapest thing on the menu at the dinner because I was so rich. Joel and I were both conscious of our spending throughout the year because you had to be, but I never remember thinking we were absolutely destitute. There we are. Sure. Whatever. That's
destitute.
Destitute. That's the big word. It's the one. At the end of the season, we played 19 events. I booked that many weekly rental cars, multiple round-trip flights, tons of one-way flights, and who knows what other expenses. Here was my income. So I can't break it down. He's going through his earnings, his base wage, his costs throughout the week. So he made $20,000. Sorry, that's $20,000 before his costs, actually. I'm looking at this.
Wow, right, that was his gross.
Yeah, that is his gross. So he
was gross.
I'm seeing here they made nine cuts that year. His biggest paycheck from earnings would have been just over $1,000. So
wow.
He goes on to say, I mowed lawns and did odd jobs during my off weeks to try to make extra bucks. I'm positive I lost money for the year. But it was the best decision I've ever made. I'm thankful to have a boss who is really freaking talented and a wife who's the most patient person ever. Also, if you live in town that has a Corn Ferry Tour event, please consider hosting a caddy or a player. That few hundred dollars that you'll save them will be much appreciated. Joel and I have made some long life friends with our hosts as well. Now, please stop asking me how much money I make unless you want me to tell me what you make first. Now, this is his first year on the Corn Ferry Tour. Joel obviously went on to have great success.
Yeah.
You can assume his rate has gone up since, and he's making quite a decent living, but that's the hardship.
It's a gamble.
Caddy out on the Corn Ferry Tour, or, you know, this is a lot of the guys out on the LPGA Tour. Unless you get a big marketable player that either plays really well or has a very good backing and very good sponsorships, like, this is what you're looking at. You're just basically living on the road just to live. Like, that's your home is the road. You can't afford not to live on the road, basically.
Yeah, and I can tell you that's exactly why over the years, even when I managed a caddy on the McKenzie Tour, the Canadian Tour for a number of players, even having a player one time get his first top 10 with me, I always gave the money back. There really wasn't any point. They needed it more than I did. I was fortunate to be a media person that was working that week. And yes, it was a double duty that I had to be in the media room and do a lot of work as well. So they made for long weeks. But any way that you can help these players, certainly when a player, you know, they make a check for whatever, multiple thousands of dollars, and they go, oh, now I have to pay you $800. And it's like, no, you know what? Why don't you take this and pay for your plane ticket home? Much more important. So yeah, don't think it's all glamorous. Don't think it's always it's not Justin Thomas winning the $2.7 million at the Players Championship. That happens once a year. One event. There's a lot of roads going up there, not only for the players, but even more for the caddies as well, which I think is really important. And I think you'll hear that more, like you said, with our guest Mark Baldwin this week.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great interview. We talk a lot about caddies. Let's hit our pars for the week and then let's get to it, because, you know, we don't want to hold this guy. I'm telling you, this is a tease. I've teased it twice now. It's a great interview. He'll be back many times. But what was your par this week, Scotty?
My par this week is I'm sort of not sure what's going to happen with the, the equipment supply is already starting to slow down at retail. Good. Golf equipment, yeah. I mean,
I went into a golf store recently, and there's nothing on the walls. Everything's old. It's not good out there.
It's crazy. I mean, there's so much demand. A lot of product is sort of behind a little bit. I'm just not sure what's going to happen. And now, you know, Golf Canada just rolled out a retention campaign today. My one question in talking to some of their staff when they're, you know, they're putting it together, it's like, okay, tee times are already full right now. Where are you going to put these people in a lot of cases? So I'm just not sure what's going to happen and how this is going to play out. especially on the equipment side, but you know, I'm kind of hopeful. So that's a par for me. Again, not really sure, you know, whether it's going to be a birdie or bogey by the time the year plays out.
Yeah, you don't know. I was listening to TSN radio the other day, and one of the broadcasters said, you know, I miss golf when nobody played it. He said, like, yeah, being able to just call any course any day and be like, hey, you got a tee time around one? Like, does 107 work? Like, what about like the next one? Yeah, we got 114 or the, like, you know,
I'm happy for the golf courses and you know any windfalls and stuff that comes their way, but I'm just worried about what's going to happen when the bubble bursts here. And you know, it's just so unequalized right now with the huge demand for, you know, shafts and clubs and grips and things like that, and then all of a sudden the lead times are, you know, 2 months and stuff already. You know, can consumers handle that? Will they deal with that? How will they react to that? How's this going to play out? I mean, it was so hard last year when a lot of the manufacturers had no sales for quite some time because they had no idea what was going to happen. And then all of a sudden they went through the roof. That's tough to manage. That really is. So I feel for the people that are in retail. I feel people that are in the supply chain within the golf equipment industry and just how they're going to deal with it.
Yeah, I feel for the consumer too, to the fact, like, you know, getting a fitting, it's so exciting. You wait for that, and then you know, waiting 8 weeks for your clubs, it's just it's a crappy experience, to say the least. Scotty, why don't we hit up our interview this week? Before we do, want to shout out the band you heard off the top and you're going to hear throughout the episode, the Elwins. Great band from Ontario as well. I don't think they're from Sudbury. I think they're from the Toronto region. They came out with a new album in 2020 called IV, and you're going to hear their music throughout this episode. So we want to shout out them, and wait till the end of the episode. You can hear their new single, Take Me All the Way. So shout out to the Elwins for the music this week. We really appreciate it. Without further ado, though, I promise this is an interview you will want to listen to, and it will not be the last time we have this gentleman on the podcast from the Corn Ferry Tour, Mark Baldwin. All right, folks, we'd like to welcome in Corn Ferry Tour member Mark Baldwin. You may have heard this guy's name over his crazy adventures the last week, trying to get to New Orleans as the alternate and unfortunately not making it into the tournament. Shout out to our guy Ryan French from Monday Q Info for getting all that out there. But he's here now to talk about that and his entire career. Without further ado, Mark Baldwin, how are you doing today, bud?
I'm great. Gents, thanks for having me on. I can't believe it. There wasn't somebody else better suited to be here, but it was very nice of you guys to extend a charitable invitation.
Yeah, we went through basically the entire Corn Ferry Tour, and then somebody said you might answer, so that's how we got to you.
I was an alternate for the podcast.
Well, you made it through. Let's just start with that story of that last week, which kind of got your name back into Scott and my's brain again. Just talk through the whole story of just being an alternate. I don't think people really understand this. Now you hop on a flight to New Orleans to hopefully get in. You're on site. You're getting texts from the second alternate. The whole nine. Let's just run through that whole story of what that week was like.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people don't think about what an alternate, a player living on the bubble and in the alternate space, goes through. And even one of my very best friends said that to me after the last week, and this guy is caddy for me every stage of Q school. His claim to fame is that he has a perfect caddying record. We've gotten through every time he's caddy for me.
That's impressive.
But he said, as closely as he follows golf, he didn't even appreciate the challenges of the alternate lifestyle. And especially because you see so many players who, you know, withdraw. They try to tee it up because, you know, either they have kind of a minor injury, or they think that they can make it through and hopefully get some treatment, or they're just, you know, we don't want to name names, but occasionally people get paid, you know, just to hit that first shot, and then they call it a day. But especially on the Corn Ferry Tour, where starts are so, so valuable, it becomes very crucial to get these starts. As somebody who you know, I started last year with really strong status, and I've kind of gradually come to the place where I am now. So the first event of the year was in Sarasota, and this was about a month ago. And we had a very, probably the most unique alternate situation that's ever happened in golf, pro golf, where I was about the eighth alternate going into the week, and I moved to the seventh alternate by Monday. Now, so I went to play the Monday qualifier, and you hope that as an alternate outside of the top four or five, that there is some act of God that happens to allow you to be get to that first alternate spot where you at least have a chance. And so I didn't get through the Monday, so I stuck around for the week anyways just to see. And nobody withdrew. I was the seventh alternate. Nobody withdrew. There was a tour-wide meeting on Wednesday night, and I saw all of the alternates I saw the four alternates who were next scheduled to get in the field. They were all on site. So I figured, all right, there's no chance I'm getting in. Literally nobody in the history of pro golf has ever gotten in as a seventh alternate on a Thursday. It's just not going to happen. So I bought my flight for the next morning, got on a plane to Atlanta, which was then my connection to go back to Phoenix. And I landed in Atlanta, and literally when we were on the runway, right after we had wheels down, I got a call. And it was, hey, Mark, you're on the tee in 9 minutes. You're in the field if you can get here.
Ugh.
And I went, hold on, let me just go talk to the pilot. So that was a crazy thing. There was not an alternate on site. Everybody outside of the first alternate at that point, who was Hayden Buckley, who went on to win the tournament.
Wow.
Which is an insane, crazy situation in itself, had gone home. So because there was nobody on site, I figured, this next week there would be, you know, everybody and their brother would be lined up to make sure that never happened again. And surprisingly, that was not the case at all. So I was, because it was opposite Honda, I was about 18 to 20 out about a week before, like the Monday before the tournament week. And it was my son's first birthday on the Monday of Louisiana Open. So I decided that, look, there's 260 guys in the field for eight spots. They're divided across two courses. If I'm really going to miss my son's first birthday for a four spotter on a full field with a 2:30 tee time that's going to run into Tuesday, I'm doing it wrong. I decided not to go to the Monday. And after Monday, I had moved a bit. I think I was down to maybe like 12th alternate or something. But, you know, you're just like, well, I'm not going to get that much closer. And then Tuesday, I moved a little bit closer, but not much. And I think by Wednesday morning, I was about seven out. So still like not even in the realm of possibilities I'm going to go. And then I got a call, and it was like, hey, the first and second alternate are going to go. You've moved up two spots. And then there's two alternates in front of you who may not show. They like, we've talked to them, and they're thinking about, you know, they're just in some faraway places and it's hard to get to. So they're probably not going to come. And so we just tracked that throughout the day. And I get down to like to third alternate, where it was kind of the point where I was like, all right, we need to make some decisions here. And I had looked at some flights earlier in the day, just in case, again, an act of God occurred. And then I got down to second alternate, and it was probably about 5:15 in the evening in Phoenix. And there were two flights out. There was one to Dallas at like 6:30 and one to New Orleans at 6:59. So New Orleans was closer significantly than Houston. Houston's 4.5 hours away, but neither place had rental cars. It was spring break week for a lot of people, and it was also St. Patrick's Day. And so I messaged some friends and Ryan French as well. And I was like, hey, like, here's my situation. Do you know anyone, you know, in New Orleans who might have a car, or know of somebody who has a car, or, you know, wouldn't mind making a late night trip, and I'm happy to pay them, handsomely. And so kind of had some small nibbles here and there, but in fairness to everybody who I dealt with through this time, my flight was scheduled to land at 12:15, and I would not drive a complete stranger, COVID times, non-COVID times, through the middle of the bayou in the wee hours of the morning to a golf tournament as an alternate. So anyways, I basically flew to New Orleans on that last flight out of Phoenix with there really wasn't a plan. I figured it's going to be very difficult to get an Uber. It's going to be very difficult to get a Lyft. There are no rental cars available. Maybe there's a possibility we get in early and I can go to the counter and somebody turns one in last minute, who knows? So we actually did get in a little bit early. We got in before midnight. So, but there were still no rental cars available. Meanwhile, a friend had an acquaintance who I had spoken with on my way out of Phoenix. And she needed money. Her name was Eva. She needed money. She was willing to do it. But there were some kind of, she seemed okay on the phone. Mm-hmm. You know, you really can't be picky at that point as to who you're riding with. So, you know, I don't need an all-star Sterling reputation individual to drive me, but I don't want, you know, somebody who's been having partying all night, who shows up maskless and with a car that has three tires at work and one that is questionable. So I felt that out as best I could. And once I landed, I felt comfortable enough with her that I was happy if she was willing to make the drive. But I landed. She, after exploring the other possibilities, she said, eventually getting back to me, that she would do it for $300. It's a 2-hour drive. And it's, again, it's, you know, by the time she would get there, and at this point it's 12:15, 12:20, you know, I've been waiting around a while. She's like, you know, I can probably get there 10 minutes from like being ready. And then I'm 30 minutes away. And now keep in mind, as an alternate, you have to be there on site really before the first tee time in case those, you know, there's any problems in those first couple of groups, but also we have COVID testing. And so I have to test negative before I even get that opportunity, you know, to tee it up. So I need to be there before the first tee time, which is it was like 7:10 was the first tee time. So, you know, it kind of feels like as I need to get there as soon as possible. And she's kind of hemming and hawing about when she can get there. And I'm looking on the ride shares and I'm like, you know, I'm going to be a little bit bold here and I'm going to demand that there be some adherence or some acknowledgement of the market value of a ride to Lafayette right now. So I just politely say to her, look, I can jump in a ride share right now for, you know, $160 to $200. I was like, I understand that a premium has to be paid given the time of night and the circumstances around our situation. But is there any way you can do it for less? Now, keep in mind, you know, we Korn Ferry Tour players, particularly living as alternates, are not typically flush with cash. So saving $50, saving $75 in every place you can really is a must, especially when you don't even have a guaranteed paycheck if you're in the field, let alone if you're taking a last minute flight that costs a lot of money and then sitting around on site all day. Eventually, you know, you're going to have a hotel room to pay for as well. So she immediately calls my bluff and she's like, you know what? I totally understand. If you can get it for a better price than $300, please do it. And I'm just like, well, shit. She called me out and I was really hoping that I doubled down, tried the other options. And I also had a friend that had a connection to a town car service and I had called them and was waiting to hear back, eventually heard back. They said it was too late. So then I have to go back to her, to Eva, hat in hand. And it was like, all right, Eva, I was mistaken. You were right. And I apologize. And to show you, you know, in an act of contrition here, I would like to offer you $350 for the ride. And about, I would say 15 minutes had passed since our last interaction and there was no response. And so I've assumed she had gone to sleep or I had just frustrated her enough where she was not going to reply and she was done with it and I wouldn't have blamed her. So at this point, there are so few options. It's like you're either, you know, trying to find a yellow cab or hitchhiking or whatever. Jeez. So I went and tracked down a yellow cab, and I was like, look, can we not do this by the meter? Is there any way I can just pay you a flat fee? And the guy's like, man, he's like, I'm supposed to go home to India tomorrow. He's like, I've got a, you know, an early morning flight. I really don't, you know, I'm like, name the price. We go. He's like, all right, how about $275? I'm like, done. Let's go. Snap took it. Yeah. So, he drove me there. I tried to get some sleep, but obviously couldn't. And then when we got there, it was actually too early to get to the golf course. It was, you know, 3:30 or 4 a.m. or something like that. And so I went to a hotel and I just tried to catch an hour and a half of sleep, which I did. And then I had the issue of getting a ride to the golf course before the first tee time so I could get COVID tested. And that was a whole other thing where I called another cab service that morning at, you know, 6:30. And they were like, oh yeah, we're really just down the road. We'll be there any minute. And I'm like, sweet, this is great. I'm going to make it on time. You know, I've beaten all these obstacles. And I just sit there and 10 minutes pass and 20 minutes pass and 30 minutes pass. And the first tee time's about to go off. And so I call them back and they were like, oh, don't worry, sweetie. We're on our way. You know, we'll be there any minute. Another 10 minutes passes. And, you know, I just forgotten that some of that Southern lifestyle, it's like,
it's the opposite, you know,
if they tell you that they're, you know, they're nearby, it might mean you have time for a nap.
Yeah. Rubber time.
So yeah, I mean, then wasn't that eventful from that point forward. We just got the alternates. There's one alternate in front of me. We'd gotten a couple of reports that there were multiple players who had some issues they were dealing with, back issue. I think one guy had a wrist issue. And one of the players was literally being carted off from the range to the parking lot because he was going to withdraw. And I had been told he had withdrawn. And I'm like, all right, I'm only one out. It's, you know, 7:30 in the morning. I've got a legitimate chance now. This is not all for naught. And it turned out he decided last second to tee it up. Anyways, I didn't move for the rest of the day. I never advanced past second alternate. The first alternate never moved. So the only benefit was I got a negative COVID test and I got to practice around a bunch of tour players. But at one point what was pretty interesting to see is how many people had kind of taken to the story and were really rooting me on. And the really heartening thing about it was to get these messages, these direct messages, like, hey, if you need anything, you know, let me know. Can I buy you lunch? Can I buy you dinner? Just some really nice, encouraging, supportive messages. So that was, I think the way to put it is I went a long way to have my faith in humanity restored.
And to come on this podcast.
And I've now been invited on your podcast. I've moved from an alternate position to a featured guest.
I'm curious of that position. Let's say you actually end up in the field. What do you do for a caddy in that situation? Because my understanding, unless the Korn Ferry Tour changed it due to COVID, right? Like every player needs to have a caddy. Mm-hmm. Are you grabbing the guy standing at the tee that's just kind of there, like making the coffee and like, hey, carry this?
It actually is a great way to get a bag. If you're a caddy, it's just to be around. You get COVID tested, you wait around. It's kind of like an alternate caddy. And somebody in my situation doesn't have many options. So it's like a caddy fire sale. It's first come, first serve. And, you know, I had two caddies that came up to me like, hey, can we get your bag if you get in? And I was like, I'd be happy to give you my bag, you know.
I actually don't have an option.
I'd be amused. You guys can fight to the death for it.
Actually, can any one of you pay me for my cab here?
Yeah.
Those situations, that's a whole other grind of those traveling caddies just hoping find the right bag at the right time. Now, you've actually... Yeah. I'll say it. You've been stuck having Ryan French from Monday Q, info caddy for you a couple times. And I'm curious, you've done a lot of Mondays yourself. If there was a Monday qualifying to be a caddy, how often does Ryan get through Monday qualifying? Now let's clarify. This is completely hypothetical. What that would entail is completely different, but you know, what was it like having that guy as a caddy? We love Ryan.
I think it would depend if the player was taking a tour bag or not. We found out pretty quickly that tour bags were not something that he enjoyed. And, but I think, you know, he'd get taken probably if it was between him and a pro caddy and like, you know, a D3 college player, maybe sophomore, who had plans the night before.
And a podcaster. He'd get taken
probably like in 2/3 of those situations.
All right.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it depends too. Like you could even break it down further because pro caddy is just such a large category. And we were, I was talking about it today with some people, like there's a pretty wide range of skill levels, particularly on our tour. And you wonder sometimes how guys continue to get jobs. but I would say like, I'd say Ryan would fall into, because he actually matches up really, really well with my personality. And I don't love talking about golf and like really grinding, about the technical side, of just everything, you know, you can get so deep into detail orientation when you're on the golf course. That's not really my style. So I think I would take him a lot more frequently than, you know, probably another Korn Ferry Tour player would.
Now, when you talk about those guys that you're like, how do they still have jobs out here? What are the type of stuff that I don't think people understand? Like, what are the type of stuff that they're doing where it's like, you know, I'm taking the chance on the guy pouring my coffee over that guy because I just know what he's done.
You know, there's some things just at some point, like our lives require a lot of it's like that Ray LaMontagne song, beg, steal, or borrow. You need to cut some corners sometimes to be able to continue to pursue professional golf. And that is so magnified, I think, if your dream is to be a caddy on the PGA Tour. And, you know, so there have definitely been too many caddies that have probably taken that mantra a little too far and decided that beg, steal, and borrow applies to the player that they currently have, you know, as their saving grace or as their mark. And I think those are at the really bottom of the barrel. And you hear stories like that and you just think, what, you know, first of all, you're never going to hire that person, but like, why does anybody else, they must not know about these situations. And then there's just like the people that are hanging on and they're sleeping in their cars and parking lots. I mean, they just don't, on the Korn Ferry Tour, like it's so hard to turn a profit over the course of the year. And you're not really paying a caddy as a base rate much at all. I mean,
what's it like $500 or something like that? 5 to 7?
Like a stock for like a very, very, very beginner caddy is going to be like probably $800. But like the upside for the week of like a really experienced caddy is $1,000, $1,100, maybe $1,200. But like that range is so insignificant compared to the range of skill level that we're talking about. And so at that amount of money, you're really not covering your costs unless you're, you know, again, cutting a lot of corners and finding people to stay with and driving to a lot of your sites and, you know, splitting car costs and just splitting every cost, you know, cooking all your meals. For people whose dream that is to get on the PGA Tour through caddying, you know, at a certain level, you have to have some respect for that because they have to go through so much more than you even do as a player. But it requires, you know, sleeping in vans and parking lots and soliciting way more than is comfortable or appropriate.
Starting an OnlyFans.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah. I don't have any problem if somebody comes to me as a caddy and they're not very good at their job. You know, like if you're not very good at your job, like you get the wind direction wrong a lot, you get the reads wrong a lot. You're very outspoken while doing those two things. At least be emphatic about it. At least commit to those wrong pieces of advice.
Yeah. I mean, for you, I mean, you know, playing internationally for a lot of years and, you know, you've obviously turned pro quite some time ago and you've had a lot of experience overseas and things like that. Have you ever had a situation where you've had a caddy where immediately you thought, oh boy, I got to get this person off my bag as quickly as possible?
Yeah. And this is a nice transition into the Asia conversation. Actually, I had a, before I ruin the story with by giving like the crescendo of the story away, I'll try to give you the abridged version of the story, because the long version we'd have to be here well past breakfast tomorrow.
Well, based on your first story, we might be here till the morning.
Yeah, it's all good. Which is fine.
There must have been some caffeine in that tea I was drinking. But I went to the, it wasn't the Korean Open. It was at Sky 72. There are four majors on the Korean tour, and they are often co-sanctioned with the Asian tour, or at the time One Asia tour. And I don't remember which major this was. It wasn't Korean Open, but I played terribly. It's probably why I don't have a very clear recollection of the tournament. But one person I was traveling with played really well. He got in the final group. He was paired with Retief Goosen and KJ Choi in the final group. And his name was Lu Sen Lien, and he lived in Taipei. And I lived in Taipei at the time. And Lu Sen, KJ Choi in the final group in Seoul, Korea, man, it's like, you know, that's Jagger going to Liverpool.
Yeah.
It was just chaotic. And that this was too, was like 2010, just the peak of KJ Choi's fame and notoriety. So Lu Sen plays very poorly in the final round. And while there was a ton of people there, no, there wasn't a whole lot of attention on him, and somebody communicated to him, and just, he didn't speak English very well, and neither did this spectator, but communicated to him, "I'm a huge golf fan. If I can ever do anything for you, I would love, you know, just to help out anyway." So we need to get from that tournament to a tournament that was up on the, it was on the North Korean, South Korean border. And we didn't really have a way to get up there short of like taking buses and it just being really complicated for foreigners. So he called this guy, whose name was Mr. Lee, and his business card had a couple of boxing gloves and said in Korean he was a boxing promoter.
Okay.
And so Mr. Lee ends up coming to pick us up and drives us to the next tournament site, which was up on top of this mountain. And on the way we stopped off, and it was a bit of a hike. You know, it was a few hour drive. We stopped off at two different restaurants to meet his brothers. He kept calling them his brothers, and they owned these restaurants. And so we'd sit, and his brothers would come and they'd sit with us, and they all had these dragon tattoos, and they were super nice. They all had these button downs, and they were all kind of like very masculine looking Korean men. And, but we had, you know, these great meals. And so, you know, we get to the close to the tournament site, and we're like, "Mr. Lee, you know, you have a lot of brothers, many, many brothers." He's like, "Yes, many, many brothers." We say, "Oh, what's with the tattoos? You all have the dragon." He goes, "Yes, dragon brother, many dragon brother." And we said, "Oh, okay. Yeah. But not like family brothers, just like friends." He's like, "You know, the Godfather, you know, Brando, Godfather."
Oh boy.
And we're like, so mafia?" He says, "Japan Yakuza, you know?" And we're like, yeah, we understand what you're saying, Mr. Lee. "So are you a boxing promoter?" "Boxing promoter, dragon brother."
Wow.
So Lu Sen turns to me and he's like, you know, this is crazy. And so at this time, Mr. Lee started pitching Lu Sen. He was very much a fan of Lu Sen on caddying for him. And Lu Sen's like, he's like, "Man, I don't want this guy to caddy for me. Like, I don't really want anything to do with this guy now." I'm like, "Come on, he's, you know, he's driving us. Like, he's been nice. He's paid for our meals. Like, what's the problem?
What's one dragon tattoo on your arm?
What's a dragon tattoo?" And so Lu Sen's like, "You take him." He's like, "I don't want to take him." He's like, "But I don't want to tell him no." So I was like, "Great." I was like, and at this time I had this this mantra of when I went to Asia, I was going to say yes to everything. Mm. Caution to the wind and just have as many experiences as I could. So I was like, "Mr. Lee, Lu Sen's going to play terrible this week. Like, I missed the cut last week. I'm super rested. You want to be on my bag this week?" So Mr. Lee was very excited about that. He befriended many players, particularly on the international side of this tournament, and he was taking them out to dinners and to after hours parties every night of the tournament. I stayed pretty focused on my game that week, and I ended up I played in the final group on Friday, last tee timeout, and we marked our balls on 16 due to darkness, and we had to come back the next morning. I was on the cut line, and so I parred 17, which is this really hard par 3. 18 comes around, really hard par 4, and I end up with like an 8-foot snake downhill slider right to left to make the cut. And he had brought 8 of his Dragon brothers out to watch that morning. And, you know, this was like, they came out to watch you. You can't let the Dragon brothers down. You cannot miss this putt. Who knows what happens if you miss this putt? And the extra pressure was, I remember standing over that putt and just thinking, you can't let the Dragon brothers down. This is for the Dragon brothers. And I pushed the putt just a teeny tiny bit. And fortunately, it broke just a little more, catches the edge and sneaks in the high side. And these Dragon brothers just were running around high-fiving each other. They ran out into the green. They were so incredibly excited. So to bring me back to the point of, you know, a caddy who's taken things a little too far. There was a company at the time called Profound, and they were they're mainly a putter company, but they were very, very hot in Korea. And they had a presence at this tournament with some reps, and they were just a very high demand company. And I'd given Mr. Lee I was a Titleist player. I'd given him a bunch of Titleist equipment, but he didn't want the Titleist stuff. He had no interest in the Titleist stuff. He wanted the Profound stuff. And I finished my round on Sunday, and because there was like this only one kind of mountain road up and down, and we were trying to beat this crowd that had come to watch on Sunday, I went straight into the locker room to get ready to go, and Mr. Lee had packed up my stuff. And Lucen didn't come with us. We left with an Australian magician named Henry Epstein. He's got some hilarious magic, and he's just a I think he's now the host of the Steph Curry show, the Steph Curry mini golf show
here. Oh, the putting I forget what the name is.
What's the name of that? Oh, Holy Moly.
Yeah.
So there's an Australian version of it, and he's now the host of it. But at the time he was in Mr. Lee's car with me, and Mr. Lee had packed my bag, and we're going down this mountain pass. And the other part of the story that I'll just touch on really quick is that during this time, you have American and South Korean military forces on one side of the border, and you have the North Korean forces on the other side. And they are all running training exercises. And in a lot of cases, as I remember it, the noise level was a sound of intimidation towards the other side. So we were hearing gunfire pretty constantly, like, you know, assault weapon fire while we were playing in this tournament. So we end up driving back to the airport. Mr. Lee drops us off. I get out and I realize I have not checked, you know, my bag. I don't really know what's in here. Did everything make it? Did everything not make it? Mr. Lee's driven off. I try to give him some money. Mr. Lee wouldn't take it. I open my bag up. I look inside, and the Profound equipment is not there. And I'm like, this is really strange. And Henry says, mate, what's the problem? I said, well, you know, the Profound putters aren't in the bag. And he goes, ah, mate, that's the problem with being part of the family. What's mine is yours. And I'm like, well, surely Mr. Lee wouldn't have. So I messaged the rep, and I was just like, hey, did I leave in the locker room? Can you just look around there? And a few days went by, and I got an email from the rep, and he said, Mark, I found the equipment that I gave you. It's a long story as to how I came about it. But what you need to know now is the guy who caddied for you is a dangerous man, and I would recommend that you don't talk to him again.
Wow.
So,
wow. So that's the Korean tour.
I was a guest of the Korean mafia.
Amazing. Where's your tattoo?
Yeah,
I'm saving it for the next time I go back to Korea.
Oh, I like it.
That is crazy. We were looking earlier this week, Scott and I, just doing our research, because we're a very professional podcast, as we drink wine talking to you. I was looking at the actual official money on the PGA Tour China when you played there in 2016, and this can't be U.S. dollars, right? Like, you're not making 79,000 U.S. when you finish second place there, correct? This is in yen?
RMB.
Okay.
Oh, so it's RMB, the other current, the other Chinese currency. Yeah. Okay.
So RMB. And it, I think it translated at the time, it was like 7-1.
Okay. So, yeah, I was going to say, because, like, I was looking at this, I was like, why wouldn't players play out here more? Like, that's some good money. So what's it like when you're, when now we're in China, what's it like to travel on that type of dollar? Is it actually like more effective to be playing out there with the travel and the stay, or is it actually worse than playing something like the Korn Ferry Tour? We know the McKenzie Tour, you can't really beat that in terms of the cost. You're never going to make that back. But in terms of PGA Tour China, is it decent?
The purses are the exact same. Aside from a little bit of wiggle room that they have because of their relationship with the China Golf Association. So the China Golf Association has a stake in the enterprise. And they do have a bit of leeway, and there are some events where the purses are slightly higher. Like, they run an event in Hong Kong and the purse, I want to say it was a double purse for that week. And also because of the relationship with the China Golf Association, which is a government organization, they also have a certain amount of spots allocated to the field for exclusively Chinese players. And because because golf in China is a relatively new sport in terms of development, that's really the best part about playing it, trying to earn your status on the Korn Ferry Tour, is that the fields just aren't as deep because you have professional players who maybe went through the China junior golf development system, but they're just not as far along. And so the fields just weren't as deep. So, you know, it was almost, I don't want to say it was a guaranteed check every time you teed it up, but the cuts were significantly easier to make than they would be on Canada or on Latin Tour. Now, we had some really strong players that came through, Callum Tarran, and Charlie Saxon, Marty Doe. Those guys were like the all-stars, you know, of the years that I played. So it was still a challenge to win, but you could turn a profit playing over there, which you can't say a lot. The costs of travel there are really insignificant. We stayed in super nice hotels. It really wasn't that expensive. It really was a great tour. There's a lot of very strange and unforeseeable factors that you had to deal with just being in China. But I would tell anybody who asked that it is well worth going over and, you know, cutting a few years off your life for, you know, breathing in all the stuff that you do over there and eating what's in your bowl for trying to get a tour card.
Where did you stay when you were there on that tour? Did you have like a permanent residence that you stayed in for that year? Were you traveling back and forth? I see a couple of pretty decent gaps in tournament play that year you played over there.
Yeah. There was, because I went over and played, you know, 08, 09, and, then I played later on the One Asia Tour. The early times when I went to Asia, I had lived in Taipei and I lived in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. And as great as the life experiences were, it just wasn't like conducive to improving at golf. So I decided that I wouldn't spend any length of time, you know, in another country in between events. So I would go over for stretches of, you know, 4 to 8 weeks. And then I would come back for another, you know, month or 2 months or whatever. But, most people did that. There were a few guys that lived in Thailand in the off weeks, but for the most part, everybody was just constantly getting on these 25-hour flights.
Brutal. Man, I think we could go all day about your story. We're going to have to get you back on here. I know we want to get you to dinner. You got a big week this week. You're down in Savannah this week. Not an alternate this week. How's the game feeling right now? I mean, obviously, you're looking at 2020, probably not your best year by your standards. How are you feeling right now going into the week and the rest of the year?
I feel great. I've hired, to get back to our discussion on caddies, who I believe is one of the very best caddies on tour, Chris Nash. He caddied for Lanto Griffin when Lanto won last year. And he was on the LPGA for a while, and he's just been a longtime friend of mine. So he has a record with players of coming in at the right time when the players have really kind of hit rock bottom and you know, there's just nowhere for him to go. And just like, he's like a like an interim CEO that just turns people around. So I feel really good about that. I also like the golf course a lot. There's a lot of three woods on this course, and I just happen to be in full command of my three woods. So I think I'm going to get a lot of nice opportunities with short irons this week. So I feel great. I love the golf course. It's in excellent shape. We played it at the end of last season in October when it had been really wet and there was a heavy Bermuda grass on the ground. And so, you know, the course just wasn't in the same shape it is now. Now it's tight. It's been overseeded, and it's just like, it's in beautiful shape now. So I think it's going to be a good week. We're supposed to get a lot of rain Friday, Saturday. Hopefully we can dodge some of that. But if it's in the condition it is now with a little bit of wind, it's going to be a good test. I think it sets up nicely for my game.
Well, if Chris Nash is the guy that gets you out of the bottom, if you're looking for one more week of just sorrow, I'm the guy you should call, where it's just like, whatever, we'll just bring him out. Let's make him work for one more week of pain. Mark, as I said, I know you want to head to dinner.
I'll flip a coin between you and Ryan French. or better yet, you guys can fight each other to the death in the first tee.
I think I got him there. I'm just running around and he's going to chase me. He's going to die.
Well, right? you have a child on the way.
Yeah.
So you're going to want to do that probably before you have the kid, because you start to get the deliriousness sets in.
Yeah.
He's got a couple of kids though. So, you know, you might just be in slightly better shape.
Well, let's end on that. Like, this is probably my last podcast without a child. You know, what advice do you have for me, and how did becoming a father kind of change golf for you?
Yeah. You go take the classes at the hospital, but nothing can really prepare you for what's coming. And you just really have to hope you luck out and the baby likes to sleep through the night. Cause I've had friends on both sides of the fence where they're like, we can't believe your baby doesn't sleep the night. Our baby sleeps perfectly. And I'm just like, I hate you and never talk to me again. I'm not saying this because I have an obligation to, but my wife is definitely a superhero in it, and she's been through a lot. But having a baby in a pandemic year is not recommended. There's a lot of, I think, anxiety that goes along with being a first time parent, right? Like, where even those first couple months, we made the mistake of having the baby sleep in the same room those first couple weeks with us. I wouldn't do that. You need to switch off. And you basically need to, I think, if you have a baby that's not sleeping wonderfully through the night, you're basically on shifts and you're just handing the baby off. And it's probably the only time you should see your wife. When you hand the baby off, you go straight to sleep. It would be very good for your sanity to do that. But we made the mistake of not doing that for the first couple of weeks. And we learned quickly that was a mistake. And, you know, we were on the verge of divorce, but fortunately, she's a lot more patient than I am, so we hung.
She married a professional golfer. Like, that's harder than that.
Well, and she caddied for me in China too, so she's a very patient person.
Oh, that's awesome, Mark. Well, we'll have to get you back on.
Totally, best of luck to you, Stefan. I'm sure you'll do really well at it, and I wish you guys nothing but health and all the best.
I appreciate that, man. You know, we've only been talking for about 40 minutes now, and I feel like We've made a favorite of this podcast that we'll have to have you on many times over the next year. And we'll look forward to watching you over the next year on the Korn Ferry Tour. No more of this alternate crap, man. Let's get a win this week. Let's lock it in and keep it going, so we don't have to worry about finding you rides and cabs or calling Eva in the middle of the night. Hope she shows up. Let's get it done.
Okay. I like that plan. And it's good to know that if I don't get a win this week, I have a guest podcast invitation for your podcast
anytime.
That's very nice.
And you always
standing
have
order.
You always have a bad caddy. You always have that phone number anytime you need it. So there you go. All right, Mark.
Thanks, Jets.
We
much appreciate
it.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
I told you all, that was an interview. That was a great interview. Mark is, you know, we're before the show, just, you know, a little inside baseball, how this works. We like to say, you know, how long you got, anything you want to go. You know, he was kind of like, you know, 20 minutes. I might get hungry. I might just cut you off and tell you I'm leaving. I realized that was a lie 8 minutes into the first answer to the first question. And that was like halfway through that story. And then the story just got better and better. We have to get that guy back on. Like, we could have a weekly segment with him. He's just so well-spoken and just such a genuine, nice guy. We didn't know him prior to going on. And I said to him afterwards, like, I legit feel like I met a friend. He's a guy I want to hang out with.
Yeah, story time with Mark for sure. I mean, I feel that he's probably got, you know, given the fact that, you know, he turned pro over, I don't know, probably a dozen years ago or so, he's probably got hundreds of those stories and he tells them well. And you know what? He's a television and film graduate, I think, from Notre Dame. And obviously he's done a little bit of work, probably doing some broadcasting film stuff and things like that, even if it was part of his schooling. And just a great guy, you know, cool personality, cool perspective on the game, much different than just maybe a golf ball. He's not a golf ball.
He's not. He's just a guy that happens to be very good at golf and could talk to you about anything. He's a great dude. And I give him Paul Azinger's job. Like, it's way better. Last week, we talked about three-hole stretches. Scott's favorite three-hole stretch in golf is called the Bear Trap. It takes place at PGA National, where they just played this week, the Honda Classic. And we said, like, unlike many times where we say we're going to do things on this podcast, we never do them. We said we'd come back, and next week we'd play a little game where we're going to give three-hole stretches, and we're going to name them. We all know ones like Amen Corner,
right?
You know, the Snake Pits, or, you know, you got any other ones off the top of your head that you can remember?
Yeah, I mean, the Green Mile at Quail Hollow. Wicked Six, which is one I've mentioned on the podcast, I think the very first year, which is a six-run stretch. It's Sun Ridge Canyon in Arizona, which, believe me, you play these six holes and you wonder what are the other 12 called, because those six were nasty. Alligator Alley, which is another one in Myrtle Beach at the Dunes Club as well, which I kind of like that one. And then some people that have obviously familiar with Colonial and watching that tournament know the horrible horseshoe there as well.
Yeah, so we decided we have five here. We're going to name now. You prepared answers. I thought we were just going to riff here.
It's hard, man.
Because, you know, we're clearly professional comedians that we're just the ability to just riff.
We're no Jerry D. That's for sure.
So we'll go through this. I came up with five, and we're just going to go up and figure out what our names for these are. So let's start with St. Andrews. I think it's a pretty famous stretch, 16, 17, and 18. The final three, you got the road hole in the middle and that short par four to wrap it up with the hotels wrapping around it and the RNA in the background. So you came up with one. Why don't you start?
Yeah, I thought about it. I mean, a lot of people come in and play 16. They don't really think about it too much, but you know, you go to that road hole in 17, and one of the big features of finishing the road hole, you look over to the right and you see the jigger in. And then, of course, you know, once you get done 18, you know, just around the corner is the Dunvegan. So I figured, you know what? You may as well just call it the pub crawl and get it over with, because that's what's going to happen. It is St. Andrews. They've got over 100, you know, licensed establishments in town. So I love maybe the last three being called the pub crawl.
I see. Once I saw that, I can't come up with anything better. That is the perfect name, because you like in that the road hole, you're crawling through that. That is a hard hole. And if you're getting through it, you might feel like you crawled through that. 16's all right, but, and then 18's obviously all right, but like, just like, let me get home.
I can't even imagine how many people probably get done the road hole, look over, see the jigger in, and want to go, you know what? I know it's iconic, but I just want to get over the fence and go to the jigger and have a big pint.
Yeah. I like that. Or I guess like, I'll call it the get me home, I guess, is where I'm going with it. The pub crawl, though, has got to win. I'm giving you the win with the pub crawl. That's perfect.
Well, I wanted to make it funny, too. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of serious ones, and, you know, we're going to have some of those, I'm sure. But I think it'd be funny just to hear what listeners think as well, what some good names would be for some three-hole stretches, even at their own course. Maybe they've got a name for some of those. That'd be great to hear.
There's a course I mentioned on this podcast, good cottage course, north of the city in Verona, Ontario. And you get up into the back nine, it's called Rivendell, and you get in the back nine, you get right in the trees, and there's deer fly traps everywhere because there's just many deer flies. So they call it deer fly corner instead of amen corner, because you just get in there, you're trying to hit tee shots, you're getting bitten. So deer fly corner is one of the only ones that I know. Good three-hole stretch of I believe it's 12, 13, 14 as well. Why don't we let's hit up Pebble Beach. And I'm not going to do a usual one. I actually had to explain why I went here.
I was trying to figure it out. I don't know what you're doing. I looked at the notes and I'm like, what? Those holes?
The first three holes at Pebble Beach is where I want to go. So, Scotty, what are your thoughts on for people that don't know, the first three holes, I believe not until you actually get to the third hole do you even be able, can you even see the ocean?
Right. Yeah, the first two are inland holes. And, you know, I thought about this. You said it. I'm like, oh, well, you know, obviously most people are thinking about stretches like, you know, 6, 7, 8. I've heard Cliffs of Doom about those three holes. And, you know, they know the iconic last few holes. So I'm like, Stefan, where are you going with this? And then I realized, oh, I know where he's going with this. They are the least memorable holes. And I'm thinking, based on the price to play this golf course, you tee off that first hole, while you might be enamored in the fact that you are at Pebble Beach, you're probably going, oh, this is not as good as I thought it was. So I'm calling it the wallet squeeze, because you're teeing off going, uh-oh, have I made a really serious mistake that, you know, I could be playing Pacific Grove down the road for $60 instead of paying, you know, $600-$700 here. I'm calling it the wallet squeeze for that trio of holes.
I'm going a different route. I think you're right. I'm going with, you know, it's an empty promise. We've always said, you know, like, I can be better. I can be better. Like, that's what I'm calling it. I can be better. The loop there.
I like the empty promise.
Yeah, it's a good one too. You know, we've all had that, because you don't know you can be better. Like, there are some duds on Pebble Beach, and really it is seeing the ocean and the history behind it. But I'm going with I can be better. That's the three stretch there. Just like, oh, just trust me. Just trust me. I can be better.
Trust me. It's gonna be okay.
Trust me.
It's gonna be worth the money.
Maybe that's the better one. Trust me. Trust me. It gets a little better. Yeah, I'm going with trust me. Actually, I'm changing it up. That's good. The final three at TPC Stadium course currently has a name called the Gauntlet, which I don't believe I've ever heard until you wrote in the notes for the podcast today.
I actually had to dig that up. Apparently Dean Beaman, the first one of the early commissioners of the PGA Tour, called it the Gauntlet, and really I don't think it stuck, because I didn't hear it once really during the podcast.
So what did you go with the name for the 16, 17, 18? For people that remember, 16 is like that great par 5, 17 the island hole, everyone knows it, and then 18 just that tough drive that Justin Thomas hit that lucky bounce recently on. So what do you got?
Well, you know, I thought about it, you know, obviously thought about a lot of things related to water, some sort of aquaphobia or some sort of thing or whatever. Then I also thought, you know what, you know, Pete Dye did the design, but Alice Dye was also very responsible for talking about things about the design work for the Island Green on 17. The Peninsula Green is really what it is. So I just went with Dye's Revenge, which I thought, you know what? Here's the thing. You get through the 15 holes. You think you've mastered the golf course, and boom, here's, you know, 16, 17, and 18. You know, the great man has passed, and, you know, he's still getting back at you.
Yeah, I didn't know where to go. My first thoughts, you know, for some reason I had Brad Paisley in my head, you know, the song Water, right?
Like, okay.
You know.
Yeah, I like
you
it.
Just, you gotta love water, right? And there's water everywhere. I'm gonna go with Trick or Treat. Each hole has that thought process, right? Right. 16
opportunity.
You got that opportunity. Could it be a trick? Like, do you got that treat with going for that or two, or is it a trick and you're in the wrong spot off the tee, or you're in the water? You know, it's tough. 17, it's the whole, every, like, when you get there, everyone wants to play it, but it could be, it tricks you. It tricks you. Yeah. You think it's a short hole. I should be able to hit this. Nope. You know, look at the guy that put up at 120 on that hole in that Golf Digest tournament 10, 25 years ago, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going trick or treat. They played in March, so it's not like it's relevant. But you know, I like it. And then 18 is sneaky. It's sneaky.
It is.
You know, people have lost the golf tournament on that hole many of times, getting a little too aggressive with their line. So trick or treat for me.
I like it.
All right. We're going to TPC Scottsdale, 15, 16, 17. I think 15 is the most underrated hole in this golf course.
Very much. Very easily.
If people haven't seen it, that green is scary, and it makes you go for it in two.
It does. It just sucks you in.
Oh, it sucks you right in. And the problem is you're not even thinking about it. You're on that hole, and all you're thinking about is the chaos that's about to ensue going to 16. And then you think it's over, and suddenly 17's become almost just as chaotic of recently. I would not be surprised if that almost turns into a second stadium in the few years to come. So 15, 16, 17 at TPC Scottsdale. Scotty, what are you naming it?
I thought about this. I was thinking about the desert, you know, kind of the animals that come in there. You know, I didn't want to go towards the snake type thing, although, you know, rattlesnakes around there are pretty common. I didn't want to lean on the snake pit from Innisbrook. So I just went with the scorpion bite because really, you know what I mean? This is sort of like a scorpion when scorpions sort of hang out and you don't really see them a lot of the time. And then they just bite you. And 15 is just like that. You think it's sort of, quaint and it's going to be okay and you've got a chance to make three here and then next thing you know you walk off with a seven and then you got to go face the spectators on the next hole.
I'm going with drunken lullabies.
What? I love it.
For people that don't know, that's a Flogging Molly song from I don't know, way back when.
Wow. But
here's why I'm going with drunken lullabies. A 16 is a drunk fest. Everyone there is partying. But this is where, you know, lullabies tend to they're positive. You think they put you to sleep, they put you in a great mood. And if you look at these three holes, they should put you in a great mood. You got birdie. Easy birdie opportunities on 15 and 17, right? But you got so many drunks sitting around there where you think it should be smooth. But, you know, have you ever tried to sing? You're a dad. You probably had some early ages where you had to tuck your kid into bed when you had a few too many. And you probably came up with a story because you couldn't actually read the book.
Oh, story time. Yeah. Made up all sorts of stories.
You couldn't actually read the book. That's where it's at. Like stories get made on 15, 16, and 17 at TPC Scottsdale. I'm going drunk lullabies. I love it. I think it's
the hard part is when your kid is like 10 or 11, you have to explain that story. It was just totally made up. It wasn't true. Don't go to school and tell your friends that because it wasn't true. So yeah, awesome name.
Dad
awesome
original. Name. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm proud of that one. All right. 15. We're going back to 15, 16, and 17, but we're going to Augusta National. Everyone knows Amen Corner, but I think this is a very good stretch of holes at Augusta National. The ones you will know are more 16 and 17. 15 kind of gets lost in the weeds being a par four. But what's the name of 4? 15, 16,
15 is par five, but you know,
sorry,
it's okay.
Right. That's what I mean. My bad. That's what I meant. People know. But 15 and 16 is what I meant.
Right.
They know those ones. 17 is the one that a little bit gets lost in the weeds. I apologize. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. You know what? I thought about this one and I thought, you know what? Here's where you get through. Probably a lot of people are probably excited if they get through Amen Corner. 14's okay. 15, as soon as they get across that water, they're thinking they're all right. But you know what? This is where the pressure comes. This is really, you know, if you're going to win a major, especially for the first time, you got to close it out here. So I thought about, you know, pressure. And one of the things that is a container that holds people that are melted to a very high temperature is a crucible. So I called it the crucible. And that's the name I went with. That is the fact that these people within those three holes, they are put under high pressure. And that's my name, the crucible.
I like it. Scotty, do you know who said the famous line, you never count your money when you're sitting at the table?
Kenny Rogers.
I'm calling this stretch the Kenny Rogers.
Nice.
Because at this point, you're seeing 15 and 16, and you're like, hey, these are birdie stretches. I can make this work. But how many names can we think of that did not make that work on 15 and 16, even 17? They're counting their chips. They're thinking, you know, I hope they got my size for that green jacket. I'm going to be looking fresh. I've got my dinner ready for the next year. They're counting their chips. They shouldn't be. Kenny Rogers is that stretch. I love it. I think it's perfect.
You could probably make a cool logo with Kramer and Kenny Rogers roasters from Seinfeld, and
right, you know, and you know, him throwing his golf
hot lamp.
Yeah, him throwing his golf clubs. You know, I'm done with these. You know,
exactly.
I'm awful. We'll get Brendan to actually throw the Seinfeld quotes in there. Yeah, Kenny Rogers. I love that. That was a good game. Oh. Let's put these tweets out there, Scotty. Maybe clip this, throw it on the Twitter and Instagram. I'd love to hear what people say. We got some great fans out there, especially, you know, our Scott. I would love to hear what our Scottish fans think of the final three at St.
Andrews. Oh, my They're God, the pub crawl.
Exactly, the pub crawl. That's a great name. That is a great name. Scotty, we got the match play this week. What we'll do is we'll do a bottle of wine. Again, what we'll do is we got to pick our four winners, but and then from there, let's say we get to pick two from those group.
Sounds good.
Right, you know what? Let's say this. Let's make it easy. Maybe we want to give each other a bottle of wine. You pick one from each group. There's, you know, a couple different groups there. You pick who wins, the top four advance or whatever it is. If you get one of those four, we're adding a name into the place this week. So, and whoever wins, the other person, if somebody wins, the other person gets a bottle of wine. If not, then we'll just move on.
We're going to have a great wine party when this is all over.
Oh, are we ever? So how many groups are there out there?
There's 16 groups, but obviously they're in, you know, categories altogether leading into a final four. So basically we've got them grouped for 1, 16, 9, and 8 are together.
Let's start there before we confuse everyone. So 1, 16, 9, and 8. Who do you got from the 1, 16, 9, and 8 group that you want to continue on?
I'm going to go with the Giant Slayer, Webb Simpson. Match play. This is a place where Kevin Kisner won, obviously, last 2 years ago. It's the type of golf course, the Austin Country Club, that, you know, firm, fast, don't necessarily need to be a bomber. Match play, you need to sort of be conservative some points, but you also need to make some putts. Webb is my guy.
I love it. I'm going with Terrell Hatton.
Terrell
Hatton. This guy makes a lot of birdies. He gets mad. I feel like you're going to get mad in this tournament. You know, match play, you get feisty, but you can let it go. That I feel like that helps him. Like, get mad, but know you have the next hole and it's gone. So I'm going Terrell Hatton for that group. Why not? I don't see, you know, everyone's like, why wouldn't you take DJ? I don't know. It doesn't, something's off. But that's when he's quiet. He's quiet and he comes out of nowhere. I think we might be really, might be forgetting somebody great here.
Yeah, it's hard to know. And DJ's grandfather just passed away as well. So even though he's expected to be playing, who knows how that might affect him. And really.
His grandfather-in-law too, right? Or is that who you mean?
I think so.
Okay. Wayne's dad.
No. They're actual grandfathers.
So. Okay. So his grandfather passed
away. Yes, exactly.
That's a tough stretch. And did you ever meet, I mean, just quick, did you ever meet Walter at all in rinks or anything?
I saw him at a couple events, got to shake his hand, but that was about it. Never really had a conversation with the man, unfortunately.
Yeah. So my mom spent a lot of time in the Simcoe area, which was right around where they lived. And it sounds like every story is true of this guy, and my mom was able to meet him, and just great guy. I know we're a few weeks behind, but, you know, Canada's hockey dad, is a great way. So, you know, I'm sure Wayne isn't listening to this podcast, but we're thinking of that whole family. And yeah, maybe it's not the best week for DJ, but we hope it is. We love DJ. He's great for golf. So the next group we have is group 2, 15, 10, and 7. This got to be so easy for listeners to keep up with.
If they're printing out the bracket, which they can, if they go to the PGA Tour website, they'll easily be able to see it there and keep track of it. So it's not that complicated. It just sounds complicated when you're trying to do it on a podcast and don't have any visuals.
All right, who do you got coming out of that one?
I've got my boy Morikawa. I seem to default to him more and more for a lot of events. Again, I like the mold of that player that's fairly consistent, can make a lot of birdies. Still worry about his putting a little bit, but I think he's a steady guy here, and he can gain some points and get enough points to advance from this group.
All right, I'm going with Joachim Niemann. This guy is really sneaky high on the birdie rate this year. Okay. I am not going to claim that. I heard that on the Golf Channel while I was eating my lunch today and then did some research. You think Patrick Reed's in this group. That's got to be a guy that you think match play. But I don't know. Patrick Reed doesn't make a lot of birdies. This is a course that you needed to be making a lot of birdies to be winning. He makes a lot of amazing pars, and when the conditions get tough, he's always in it. I don't expect the conditions to be tough this week. So I like Niemann. I went back and forth on a couple guys there. Bubba Watson does great in match play as well. And Jordan Spieth is a sneaky pick. You know, he's rated 49th somehow on this.
Connors has to face him in his group this week, so that should be very interesting.
You know what's funny? Off the top, I'd even give my par for the week, and I don't think you did either. Now that I think about it, but my par for the week was those press conferences. And Corey did one, and Corey's our guy, and we appreciate it. It was just so much. Like, can we not just have one guy come out like? No, I can beat him. I can beat him. No, I can beat them all. Like it's match play. I can beat anybody. Like, enough of this. Oh, like, he's playing really good, right? It's
Well, they get asked of, what the other players are like in their group. And they're trying to be complimentary more than anything. They're not trying to rattle it off. But they come off pretty funny. I did listen in. I mentioned to you before we jumped on the air, I was listening into the Justin Thomas one. I was having a few laughs because he was helping a few media people through Zoom problems. Let's just say that.
I guess you're not the oldest media member.
No. And here's Justin Thomas going, you're still on mute. You're still on mute. You're muted. I can't hear you. It was pretty entertaining, but it was pretty funny of JT just to deal with. I'm sure by now they've dealt with so many of them, but anyways, yes, they're trying to be polite. Certainly they're not going to come in and just say, I'm going to kick all their asses and I'm going to work my way through the group. You hope they do sometime. And certainly I don't think they're going to point out the chinks in the armor of the other players. Maybe they just don't want to give it away more than anything.
That's fair. Next group is group five, 13, 14, 12, 13. 13 and 14.
Yeah.
So who do you like in this little group here, Scott?
Actually, I just named him. I'm going to go Justin Thomas. I think he's in a good spot where he's at right now, really comfortable with a lot of aspects in his game. Obviously, winning the Players' Championship. Guy makes a lot of birdies. Can make some other things as well. But you know what? Match play really rewards that. You can get away with it. You can have a bad hole or two. But if you make a lot of birdies and have a lot of firepower, it can make up for a lot of things and get you through a lot of matches.
Yeah, I'm a little stuck here. I either want Tony Finau or Tommy Fleetwood. I feel they're same thing for me, where Tony makes a lot of birdies, Tommy can grind. You know what? I'm going Tony. This seems like a weird one. He's gonna win a weird one, and people are like, "Well, it's still not a tournament. It's got to be one of these." So
hey, it's a World Golf Championship. I'm sure he'd love to win.
Yeah, but you know how people are, right? Like,
yeah, of course.
We'll have a great take that Rory McIlroy should fire his caddy. I'm going Tony with this one. Our last one, so we got three. We're going one more group, 6, 11, 14, and 3. If you're listening at home, I apologize. 6, 11, 14, and 3. Who are you liking in this group, Scotty?
Yeah, I waffle back and forth on this. They're tough in some of the groups. I mean, a lot of times came down to a lot of decisions. It seemed like there was 50-50. It was a coin toss, one or the other. But I like Cam Smith in this. I think, he's got some good experience. He's played well in some match play events. I just like the fact, too, that, guys, Aussie guys, English guys, all that sort of thing. And I think Tyrrell is a good pick that you picked earlier. They're used to playing more match play. And I think, a lot of the American players are used to playing stroke play. I just like Cam Smith. I mean, can you beat that mullet? And how would that mullet look winning a WGC Dell a match play? So Cam Smith's my guy in this group.
You know what? This is a terrible pick. I'm saying it now. But I believe based on my honorable mention, it was my bogey this week. I got to take him. Rory McIlroy. He's going to win this week. And I'm going to go off on Twitter.
Everyone.
Oh, my God. It's just going to be, I'm going to be Harry Diamond's biggest fan this week. Just so, oh man, Harry kept him in. He said all the right things. It's all Harry. You know,
tagging your two friends.
Oh, my two friends. My two friends, Don and Joe, or whoever they want. How do I get an argument with a Don and a Joe?
I don't know.
Yeah, but here we are. They are going to hear it. Rory's my final one here. Wow. We got eight players. There's got to be a chance one of us wins the match play this week.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I like that. Another bottle of wine. We each owe each other one. So this is the rubber match, I believe, is what they just
call it. I like it. That. Yeah, it's all good.
I love it. A couple other just things to note. Kia Classic back this week, as we mentioned. Michelle Wee back in the field. You know, yeah. what do you expect from Michelle?
Sure. I mean, obviously her practice time has been limited, but, you know, it's in California, so she seems to be comfortable there. I wouldn't be surprised to see her make the cut. I'm not certainly saying that, you know, she's going to win. I'm sure she hasn't had as much practice time as maybe she would hope, but it'll be nice to see her back there. And hey, you know what? The other side of it, ANA Inspiration is next week, so a lot of the top players are there. Actually, the top 14 players in the Rolex World Rankings are there at Aviara. So it should be a great event. So it'd be nice to see Michelle back, but you know, the fact is the field is stacked. So it can be a little tougher for her to make inroads there.
Yeah. It's the short game. I would be worried about how does that hold up? But I'll be watching that probably more than I'll be watching the match play. I might not see any golf this weekend, actually, with who knows what's happening in my life.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it costs, I don't know what it is now, I think it's like $14 a day for the good TV in the hospital. So, get used to that.
All right. Feel like you know why you know that. What don't you know? Also, we talked about with Mark, the Korn Ferry Tour is back. There's also an alternate tour event, or alternate event of the PGA Tour happening in Punta Cana. So a lot of golf on TV this week. And yeah, I think it's a good weekend to sit on the couch. You know what? I wouldn't mind having, you know, the baby show up tomorrow and then we're home by Friday and just got a full weekend of just couching it. I said to the wife, you know, he's going to see his first Masters in 2021. I'm going to have to teach him the tradition of watching a Masters on his mom's birthday and how much appreciated that is. So that'll be a cool experience. Why don't we take a quick break, listen to a little bit of the Elwins, and come back and hit the mailbag, Scotty.
Sounds great.
Scotty, the mailbag, as per usual. How many food questions do we have this week?
I don't know if we had any, actually, so I'm sort of disappointed. So people bring those food questions. We need a few more of those. So, we can make some of them into a food question. We'll see. We'll twist it around.
Why not?
All right, let's get started here. What's the most underrated golf experience you have ever had?
Underrated is a good question. I thought about this for a while, and it just goes back to It's the experience when you get into the shop of just, they feel like they want you there. There's a golf course in this area. It's never going to win an award. It's never going to be in a magazine. It's nothing special. It might be 6,300 yards from the tips. But I can tell you, it's a family run golf course. When you get there, the mom's running the cash at the till. When you get in the pro shop, her sister's making you the best chicken sandwich that you will have at the turn ever. And it's just always a good experience. You're always having a good time. The course is always in good condition for the fact it's basically a farmer's field that's been turned into a golf course and, you know, stuck the test of time. And it's a course called Colonnade. That's where I'm giving my underrated golf experience, that every time I go there, I know what I'm going to get. I'm going to get good food. I'm going to get good service and I'm going to have fun. There's chances to score. There's holes that are going to piss you off because the greens are like turtle backs. It's just an underrated golf experience. So if you're thinking of underrated, you know, you and I have been very privileged to play great places around the world where it's like, oh yeah, like an under Pebble Beach is an underrated experience. Like, whatever, right? Like, the first three holes are underrated. But if I'm talking underrated, I think it is an underrated course in this area. You'll never, like, for our listeners in who knows where, even Ottawa, they're not coming down to play this course. But when we're talking underrated, that's what I think of is a course where it's just a good experience from start to finish. And, hey, you know what? If the golf is even... You know, the golf's almost third when I think of going there. It's just like, hey, no, I'm going to have some good drinks and I'm going to have good service and the golf course will be in good shape and nothing to worry about.
Yeah, that's actually, it's interesting because the last time I played there, the group that played through us on the third hole included our buddy Nate Blasco, the caddy for Hannah Green on the LPGA Tour.
He's playing golf this week.
I saw and that too. Was, yeah, and that was his, I saw he was playing Goat Hill out in California, but that was his choice being at home to go and play that golf course. So that probably tells you a lot. There's a caddy for a major champion who happens to be at home and he's going out to play that golf course. So obviously not over or not underrated by everyone. Just by a lot of people. You know what? This was a wide question. I had to really think hard about this one because I would say there's probably been more experiences in my life that are probably been underrated in golf than overrated. And I think part of the problem is that in golf, a lot of times, especially when we've talked about social media and stuff, people are always focused on the high-end stuff and certain things, you know, common things that they know about because they're familiar with it. But there are so many other great golf facilities like Colonnade that you mentioned, that, you know, provide a great experience for not a lot of dollars. And you just have a good time when you go there. One place that I thought about was, you know, in Nova Scotia. Again, Nova Scotia, no disrespect. A lot of people obviously think about, you know, Cabot Links. They know that golf course. They know some other properties that are down there. But, you know, the White Point Resort down there, I remember playing there a number of years ago. It's an old Stanley Thompson golf course, 9 holes on a peninsula next to the ocean. Waves crashing all over the place. You got to play around a cemetery on one hole. And it's amazing. It's a beautiful resort area that people go to that come out of Halifax region and they go to the beach there. Just a cool old school golf course, tiny little pro shop. I just remember going there and we actually had a big storm coming in to the point that the pro basically handed us a little gift bag and said, good luck. I'm closing up. I'm getting out of here before, you know, the power blows out or whatever. And Jeff and I were out there playing in this stormy weather with the fog and there's a beach all around it. And I just thought, you know what, this is as good as it gets. And, you know, this golf course is probably $30 to play 2 laps to go around there. So I just think if people are going to a place like Nova Scotia, which is a, you know, in Atlantic Canada, Canadian province, don't skip everything just to go to Cabot Links. There are a lot of other great experiences, golf courses that you might not know about that again, are never going to be in any top 100 rankings, for whatever value that has, but White Point Resort for me.
Yeah, you and I have been talking about trying to do an East Coast, a week out to the East Coast in August and, you know, get to PEI. I know you've been itching to see your parents down there.
Yeah.
We want to play some golf. Maybe we'll hit up these. I want to hit up these less known courses.
I think
it will be the place to go. What's the next question, Scotty?
All right. Somebody asked, how do mini tours work? Are there qualifiers to get into events?
What do you got? I mean, I think it's generally
it
speaking.
It varies by a lot.
Yeah, it varies by a lot. Generally speaking, mini tours exist to make money if they can. And the only way they don't care. Who's the first in? You signed up quick enough? Awesome. You take it.
Yeah, I mean, if people look around, obviously there's various levels of mini tours. We're probably talking tours here that are outside of the, you know, the PGA Tour realm, the tiers that they have there. A lot of these minor golf tours that are all over the place, again, as you said, you sign up. If you're a pro, a lot of them have spots for amateurs that you can go and play, but, you know, the entry fees are not necessarily a lot less. You know, you just sign up. Take your gamble and give it a whirl. I mean, that's really how it works. Yeah, exactly. So if you think you can do it, there's no better way to test yourself and to see if you're good enough. And I guarantee you that even if you lap up all the mini tours and win a bunch of the events, it still doesn't mean you're good enough to make it on the top tours.
Who's that guy? Sonny? Is it Sonny Kim?
Sonny Kim. Yeah,
that's like won like 100 something mini tour events.
Yeah.
maybe has one PGA Tour start, like under five for sure.
It's crazy. So yeah, it's basically pay for play. Yeah, you just pay your money, go out and play, and unfortunately, they don't always hand you a check at the end of the week.
No, I actually am looking it up here. He's got very limited status out in.
He should be the leading money winner on the minor league golf tour. I know that.
Last time he's played on any tour. So I played on the Korn Ferry Tour. So, oh no, he's played on the PGA Tour. He played one event ever, 2010, the John Deere Classic, the fifth major.
Monday qualified.
Yeah, he got into that. He played one event on the Korn Ferry Tour, T76, nice $1,500 paycheck, three events total. Yeah, and this guy's won almost 100 times from South Korea. That's 32 crazy. Years old.
Yeah, and people should realize too, when you play in these events, you're going to see the wide, wide spectrum of players because there's not anything that's going to filter the players out going into it. You could end up with a player who shoots 116. You could end up with a 40-year-old dreams of playing the Champions Tour. You could end up with a just out of college player. It runs the spectrum for sure. And you know what? You're all there just trying to challenge yourselves a little bit. All right, on to the next one here. What is your favorite scoring format for a two-person team event? Obviously, probably somebody who's trying to organize an event and maybe trying to think about formats.
Easy. Alternate shot. It's the best.
That's a nightmare.
It's so much fun, though. It's way more fun.
Are you talking about pure alternate shot?
Yeah, straight up.
Oh, boy.
I like you both hit a tee shot, then you go from there.
Okay.
Makes it more fun. You get a hit way. It's you're just never going to pay to play golf and then go and do that like in a random 18 holes on a Sunday. It just doesn't ever really happen. Nobody's really down. So when you get to play that, I just find it so much fun. Me and Josh Whalen, who's been on this podcast before, we played a lot of golf this summer and late nights. We did some alternate shot stuff and,
okay.
It was a blast. Like we'd finish 18, like, you want to go play another nine? Yeah. Want to play some alternate shot? Sure. And it's just like, it's just fun. It's something different. I think it's challenging. It's challenging. It's fun. That for me, give me alternate shot. If I can find alternate shot tournaments, I'm in. I think they're a blast.
Yeah, I like the we have in our pro event, we have six holes where we do alternate shot, but we both hit tee shots and then we crisscross and hit each other's tee shot and then you play alternate shot from there. So it's a little bit more complicated, but again, has that alternate shot element, which really puts a lot of extra pressure on you because, the other player hits a really good shot and you don't want to mess it up. Yeah. So for some people, I'm sure it could be a bit of a nightmare. I'm pretty traditional. I just like a better ball. You both go out there and then you take the lowest score from that. I know it's kind of boring and kind of vanilla. Yeah. But it's a great one. And yeah, alternate shots. Yeah. Kind of fun. And hey, a two man scramble is pretty good. Or a two person scramble is pretty fun as well. So there we go. All right. Any news on the McKenzie Tour schedule for 2021?
I have not heard anything, but I'm not getting great reviews from players, especially with the Q School stuff. One player asked if they were doing Q School for McKenzie Tour, and the answer was I'll paraphrase nicely. It was a ripoff for four spots for a tour that probably won't even exist. So that's where the players' heads are at. I don't believe that is the case. I believe it will exist. I have some information that a little bit embargoed under that we can't get too far into, but let's say we will, let's get Scotty on at some point and get some more information. Who knows? It might just get pushed back to where our vaccines are in a good spot that they're able to open up the border. That's the key. You're not going to get players up here if they got to come up and quarantine for 2 weeks. It's just not worth it. They're already losing money playing up here in the first place.
Yeah, I've heard a number of plans. They're obviously working on a number of solutions. Just like last year, we had Scott on here, and they were coming up with plan A, B, C, D, E, F, and going through a number of things.
Got through them all.
Yeah,
had to restart.
I would say there will be some tournaments probably conducted, but we might see it being, I don't know, there might be a series in Canada and a series in the US would be my guess. Again, I don't have any 100% information on that. Ideally, would they love to run a full schedule of events across the country? I'm sure they would. Players would love to see that as well. So I would say that they're going to work as hard as possible to have some competition. Again, don't have anything concrete on that. And we'll have to defer to Scott Pritchard, their executive director, and try to get him back on the podcast here when he can and when he can share the information. All right, on to the next one here. We've got two left here. I want to switch to graphite shafts in my iron. Should I reshaft my current set? You're going to love this one. 400 rounds in 3 years.
Nice.
Or buy a new set.
You probably need a new set.
There's got to be holes in these things.
Yeah. Did you see that? There was somebody, I forget where I saw it. It might have been Instagram. The photo of like that 60-year-old Ping iron where they're experimenting without like an actual face. And
no,
it was very cool. I don't know where I saw it. That's probably what it looks like. It looked like the face with just two massive holes in the middle. That's probably what this guy's sets look
probably.
Like.
Probably.
To be honest with you, you're probably not getting graphite shafts unless you're buying irons at this point. Because we've heard horror stories of companies trying to, they're getting orders for their graphite shafts and they can't, they're denying orders that like would have made them a year, like there's like years, like best year ever in sales, but they can't even keep up on those things, right? Yeah. It's insane. So probably from the fact he played 400 rounds, who is this guy? Or gal. Give the name. I need to know.
It's a guy. No.
Where do they play?
It's anonymous.
Do they live at the golf course? They pretty much do. Yeah, go buy a new set. Get graphite. Get fit. Make sure you get the right graphite shafts in you. And you have a better chance of getting graphite shafts that are built with those irons, like Ping, for example.
Yeah.
We'll might have some. So that's my guess.
Yeah, I'm the same with that. Retrofitting it, probably not the best choice. And, you know, at 400 rounds, you know, at this point, you're going to have diminishing returns as far as friction on those faces, especially as you get down to the lower, clubs and 8-9 pitching wedge. You know, you're not going to have a lot of stopping power on those after 400 rounds. Kudos to you for getting 400 rounds in 3 years. I mean, that's impressive as it is. But probably, you know what, if you look at the overall cost of buying that set and for the amount that you play, it's probably going to be worth it just to invest in a new set. All right, last one here. Traveling to Scotland in a few years for a golf trip. Well, that's good news that they're traveling in a few years and maybe not right away. It'd be nice if you could. Any books you can recommend for general reading about golf there? Any of those off the top of your head?
No, I just kind of want to recommend pubs if that's what you're interested in.
Exactly. Yeah, you got a few of those you can rattle off?
Oh, yeah, we can rattle them off. That's it. There's so many out there. I mean, you might have some, but, you know, when I saw this question, I'm on the, you ever been to the Criterion and
the crit. For sure,
like weekly I think of the beer and pie I had there, and it's just like,
yeah,
why is this damn pandemic still here?
Yeah,
I would kill to be able to be there. And you and I have been, we're trying to get there eventually. We're trying to build some sort of, you know, listener trip to St. Andrews. It might be a few years before we can actually get it. We're thinking this year. It's probably more likely next year for everyone. And that's one where I'm looking forward to going, showing up with, you know, say it's 12 or 16 of us, whoever, however many get on the trip, and just, you know, shutting that place down and having a bunch of pies and a bunch of pints.
So
and that's what I want to talk about. I don't got no book for you on golf in Scotland.
I've got a few that I can recommend and probably pubs as well. That's for sure. Definitely saw the circuit there a couple of times, but a seasoned Dornoch, you can't really beat that. Lauren Rubenstein spent a summer there up in Dornoch and wrote about it. Certainly a great book. Another person that spent some time up there, another Canadian, Curtis Gillespie, actually spent a year living in Gullin and wrote about it in a book called Playing Through, which is a pretty emotional book when you go through and read it. It's pretty cool to see, you know, living in the village, being part of it. His kids went to school there and stuff like that. And he writes about the whole thing, and a lot different than maybe just going there as a golfer. I think those two are really cool, just in the fact it's about living there. And another one that has, is related to living there is by Ollie Horowitz, An American Caddy in St. Andrew, which is kind of fun as well. It's basically, it highlights his tales of being a caddy in St. Andrews, and he has family ties there as well. So there are parts of that book that are emotional, but there are parts of that book that are pretty funny as well. And it's neat just to see the stories away from just the usual going to play the golf courses that have logos and pop them on your sweaters because they're part of the British Open Rota and stuff like this. This is the reality of going to Scotland, and the real Scotland, the authentic Scotland. Scotland, very much like The Crypt is, because you get a cast of characters when you go in there that you couldn't even imagine. You know, even if you think of in your mind going, oh, I'm going to go into a pub in Scotland and there's going to be this person and this person. No, it's going to be a wider array than that. And you're going to enjoy every single moment of it.
Yeah. I'll let you know this. If anyone ever offers you the Glasgow handshake, deny it.
Deny. Yeah, that's for sure.
Because you're going to the hospital with a broken nose. Thank you to everyone for the mailbag. As per usual, some great questions, and we'll look forward to it. I might pick up a couple of those book suggestions. I think they're good. I just finished the last True Hermit, I believe it was what it was called.
Okay.
Maybe that's not it. It's about this guy in where was it? Connecticut, maybe. Let me get you the right, it's called The Stranger in the Woods. I don't even know what it's called anymore. Hold on.
Is it The Stranger in the Woods by Michael Finkel?
I don't think so. Yeah, it is. Sorry. Yes, it is. It's called, it's been a long night. Holy crap.
Some dude who leaves Massachusetts, drives to Maine, disappears in the woods.
So this guy lived in the woods in Maine for years, and he was just stealing from cottages nearby just to survive. Okay. And he's just a hermit basically, and he got caught after like 27 years, and just a very cool story if you're into that.
The subtitle is The Extraordinary Story of the Last True Hermit, so you're okay on that end. You're not totally off.
Fair enough. Yeah, so I'm looking for a new book. I might pick up that. Cool. I got to finish Edward's book there, the caddy. Trying to blank on his first name. Caddy for Tom.
Oh, Bruce Watson. Edwards.
Yeah, Bruce Edwards book.
Yeah, great book.
I got that. That's probably my cottage read. So maybe I'll pick up this one about a caddy American Caddy in St. Andrews.
I will lend you a copy of that because I have one, and I managed to have a pint or two with Ollie at the Dunvegan, who's the author of that.
So, I'm gonna have to come get that when I finally get the invite to the cave. The elusive cave. Yeah. Hopefully to see that soon. Might be never if this kid shows up any day now.
It might be your refuge.
We usually do the tip of the week. It's been a long episode. Do you want to run through one, or you want to hold? What are you thinking?
You know what? I'll rattle off one real quick to make it really, really simple here. Setup and hand position, really, really important. People set up. Posture not only dictates how your body is set up, but how your arms are hanging, how your arms can move in your golf swing really can have a big effect on not only your backswing, but your downswing. A lot of players set up with their hands too close to them. Then they got to work the club out around their thigh. And then, they get a loop in their golf swing a little bit. Really plays with their path and their face control during the golf swing. So make sure you look at that as far as your setup is concerned, where your hands and arms are hanging down. Talk to your pro about that. Tighten up your face to path relationship, and you'll take some curvature out of your shots.
I like that. Very simple. This is the time right now.
Oh yeah.
If you can find a range that's open in your area, this is the time to get out there, get some feel. Like hit some balls, go get the feel, and then get a lesson. Get a lesson, get going, get started on the right path early in the season. The worst thing, I see it all the time, mid-season people are like, I'm going to go to get a lesson. And then they're like, oh, I'm all screwed up. And then they just divert back to their old way because they'd rather shoot, 89 with their old way than shoot 95, but eventually shoot, say, 82, right? So it's this is the time to do it where you have no expectations. Get out there, get some lessons, and start the season off right. Scotty, long episode, but probably one of my favorites.
A beauty.
Yeah, Mark was great. I can't wait to get him back on. Can't wait to track him over the next couple tournaments throughout the year. I believe I'm predicting this is my last episode without a screaming child in the background somewhere. An extra roommate. So we'll touch on that next week. We'll get you updates next week. Looking forward to seeing what happens there. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it'll be a different change. But
If things happen the way they happen, or we expect them to happen the next week, best wishes to both of you and the three of you. And hopefully everything goes well with that. And we're looking forward to hearing your great news.
We appreciate it. Why don't we wrap it up there? Let's thank our producer, as per usual, Brendan Kennedy, for getting us sounding great. Thanks again to Mark Baldwin. And thanks again to the Elwins. Said they're from the Toronto region. We're going to go deeper. They're from the gritty, I'm calling it gritty because it is gritty, Keswick, Ontario.
Keswick. Wow.
They're from Keswick, Ontario.
Love it.
I said off the top, you can see, check out their new album, IV, anywhere you get an album, they're on Spotify. And to finish up this episode, we're going to take it away with Take Me All the Way by the Alwyns. This is the Tea Talk Podcast, and we're going to chat with you next week.
Looking like a lost and lonely creature, trying to learn it all without a teacher. Will I find a way? Nah, nah, nah. You seem to have a way with your direction. Put me on course with your correction, and we'll get away.